Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up, tonight's debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump will be the earliest ever in a presidential election cycle. In what is expected to be a spirited discussion, which candidate stands to gain or lose the most? We'll get an in-depth preview. Also, in our Throwback Thursday segment this morning, everyone knows why Americans celebrate on the 4th of July, right? Just wait until you learn about the shocking results from a survey on what young people do and don't understand about the upcoming Independence Day holiday. And we have cool tech for a hot summer. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, June 27th, 2024. Some sad news to start the day. I saw this on the Newswire first thing this morning, one of the first things that jumped out at me. If you have ever been to the Columbus Zoo, or if you've been to the Columbus Zoo in recent years, Emmett the cheetah has passed away. Now, you'll probably, again, if you have visited the Columbus Zoo anytime in the last few years, Emmett was the cheetah that lived in the wilds at the Columbus Zoo and was recognizable to many visitors for palling around with his best friend, a yellow Labrador retriever named Cullen. The cheetah, Emmett the cheetah, his best friend was a yellow lab. Animal caretakers say Emmett died while he was sedated to undergo treatment for some health issues that he had developed. The cheetah was born in 2016, born at the wilds there at the zoo in 2016, and was introduced to Cullen, the yellow lab, when both were just weeks old. And they became fast friends and became famous for the unusual friendship between the cheetah and the yellow lab. And Emmett the cheetah has now passed away. So sad news to pass along. What else is going on? Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to start your Thursday morning here, Americans will buy anything. I mean, anything that can even remotely be called memorabilia. This weekend, the pair of blue suede shoes worn by Elvis Presley when he appeared on the Steve Allen Show in 1956, going up for auction. I guess these would be the original blue suede shoes worn by Elvis Presley on the Steve Allen Show. The iconic footwear, it says, is up for auction Friday and Saturday. The British auction house Henry Aldridge and Son is handling the sale. The bid starts, opening bid starts at $70,000, and the shoes are expected to bring in about $150,000 by the time the auction closes on Saturday. I mean, I get it. It's kind of, you know, it's an iconic part of rock and roll history, of Elvis memorabilia, and we're suckers for, you know, pop culture memorabilia. But at the end of the day, it's just a pair of shoes. That's, I mean, somebody's going to pay $150,000 for a pair of shoes that Elvis Presley once wore on the Steve Allen Show. I get their blue suede shoes. This is not just any pair of shoes, but still, at the end of the day, somebody's going to spend more than a year's salary for most of us on a pair of shoes. All righty then. This is interesting stuff. And how many times have we talked about the way our modern technology has interrupted our interaction with other live human beings? You know, we talk about the kids today with their noses in their phones, you know, everybody in a crowded room not talking to each other because everybody's on their phones. And we look at scenes like that and we kind of shake our heads. Well, you know what? Sometimes we're guilty of it as well. This story, study out of the University of Texas at Austin, finds that moms, new moms, will talk to their infants 16% less when they are on their phones. It says short intervals, even short intervals of phone use decreased baby talk by 26%. So new moms are so wrapped up in their phones, they can't even pay attention to their newborns. This could be because using a phone for a minute or two usually involves sending a text or an email, which would distract a mother enough to stop talking to her baby. And this is critical, they say, because child development experts say infants need to have consistent and responsive care, which can be made more difficult with the alluring and consuming nature of the smartphone. The lead researcher on this study for UT Austin says future research could look into how phones or how phone use impacts different activities involving kids, like meals, playtime, even breastfeeding. So that's, man, can we put down our phones long enough to interact with our newborns, please? That's crazy. Independence Day, 1 week from today, the 4th of July, 1 week from today, and there is no doubt that we like to celebrate our nation's independence in all sorts of ways. Fireworks, backyard barbecue, day at the beach. What do you have planned? It turns out how much fun you have could depend on where you are doing your celebrating. Wallet Hub has just come out with its list of the best places for 4th of July celebrations. Best cities for 4th of July celebrations. They ranked 100 of the largest U.S. cities on 18 key metrics, including such things as the legality of fireworks, whether it's legal or illegal to set off fireworks, the average cost of a beer, the average cost of a hamburger, traffic congestion, and weather. Those are just a few of the, I think, probably most important factors that go into determining the best place for a 4th of July celebration. 18 key factors in all. And based on all of these metrics, the company has picked Los Angeles as the best city for July 4th celebrations, particularly because there's only a small chance of precipitation. It's easy to plan a big party with the second most party supply stores per capita, and there are plenty of recreational activities to enjoy on a day off. Now, the whole fireworks thing is a bit of a conundrum because I don't believe fireworks are legal in California. I think their backyard fireworks are illegal, and they're really cautious about fireworks in general in California because, you know, they're very susceptible to wildfires. It's so dry out there. But setting all of that aside, all of the other factors, LA scores very well. Number one overall for the best 4th of July celebrations. Number two is New York. Seattle, Las Vegas, and Minneapolis round out the top five. So those are the best five cities to celebrate the 4th of July. Cincinnati is the top Ohio city on the list at number 20 out of 100. Meanwhile, you want to stay away from Birmingham, Alabama, which is at the very bottom of the list. So now you know. You can make your plans for the 4th of July. Interesting. Cincinnati is number one Ohio city on the list at number 20. And Toledo actually is near the bottom. I think they're number 91 out of 100. So apparently the folks at Wallet Hub not particularly impressed with the Toledo celebration of the 4th of July. And of course, 4th of July week is, we've been told, going to be maybe record setting for travel. Record numbers of folks on the roads and at the airports, and just in time for the busy travel week ahead, the 2024 World Airline Awards are out. Considered, it says here, the Oscars of the aviation industry. This survey reveals which airlines are the best, and I don't know what the all of the criteria are for naming the best and worst airlines. But in case you're interested, they do this every year, and it's a very well-respected list. The 2024 World Airline Awards have placed Qatar Airlines as the world's best for the eighth time. Qatar Airlines, a Middle Eastern carrier, the best airline in the world for the eighth time. Coming in second is Singapore Airlines, followed by Emirates at number three, All Nippon Airways, ANA, at number four, and Cathay Pacific at number five. I'm not sure where that carrier is based. They're all international carriers up there, the top of the list. More than 350 airlines in all were included in the survey. And since most of us will not fly Qatar or Emirates or Singapore Airlines, you want to know what the highest ranked U.S. carrier is? Probably no big surprise. Delta was number one among U.S. carriers on the list, number 21 overall globally. And Delta becomes the best airline in North America as a result. Delta topped the list for best airline staff in North America and the best low-cost airline in North America, Allegiant Airways. So there you go. If you are looking to plan a trip sometime this summer, there's the airlines to consider, for what it's worth. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
This is ONN.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. Information that leads to the arrest of Nico Cunningham Jr. of Dayton could pay up to $5,000. Dayton municipal court records say he is accused of shooting and killing a pregnant woman and a teenage boy. He's charged with four counts each of murder and felonious assault. Police say the suspect has ties to Richmond, Indiana, and also Cleveland. He remains at large. Plans to revitalize more of downtown Toledo are in the works, and city leaders are looking for input from the community. Melissa Andrews with ONN affiliate WTOL-TV has more.
The city is planning to develop the Huron and Madison corridor with more green spaces, parking, event venues, and more. This is in addition to breathing new life into the Nicholas and Spitzer buildings. The city says it is now focused on getting feedback on these ideas. After that, they will see the total cost of the project and find ways to pay for it through grants.
A new Ohio House bill has passed that would allow for more milkweed to be grown in the state. This is good news for fans of the monarch butterfly because it is critical in their reproductive cycle and also as a food source. Sam the Bald Eagle, who flew over the Cincinnati Reds home games from the pitcher's mound after the national anthem, has retired after 20 years. He was the first and only bald eagle to be made into a bobblehead back in 2019. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
Well, it's Donald Trump versus Joe Biden tonight. Stop me if you heard this before. You know, it seems like whenever we talk about these two individuals and the office of president, it's always something that has either never happened before or something that hasn't happened in like 150 years. And tonight, we get the earliest ever debate in a presidential election cycle. And joining us this morning is former Time Magazine senior reporter and professor of political science at St. Peter's University, Alan Sanders. Professor Sanders, thanks very much for joining us once again. We appreciate it.
Always my pleasure, Chris.
So why so early? I mean, technically, neither of these individuals are even officially the nominees of their party yet.
That's right. And why so early? Well, that's a very good question. It's the dates that both candidates have agreed to. Presumably, they've agreed to it because they think there's an advantage to them about this. But, of course, many people are tired about the presidential race already.
Yeah.
And so having the debate this early, I'm not sure that that's going to excite as many voters as each one thinks it will. Nonetheless, that's what they agreed to, and they agreed to some interesting rules, rules that we haven't seen in previous debates.
Yeah.
That is to say, there will be no audience. audience, the mics will be cut off after the time is up for each candidate, so they won't be able to talk over each other. Mm-hmm. So this is not going to be a boxing match with cheerleader audiences in the room. So it'll be a different kind of debate, hopefully a more stable and a more sober debate.
Yeah. Historically, the incumbent does not do well in the first debate. Does the fact that it's so early give Mr. Biden plenty of time to recover if he makes a significant misstep? I mean, might that be part of the strategy here?
Well, that might be part of the strategy here for Biden, but also for Trump, because remember, he's also a former president.
Fair enough.
Both men are known to be surrounded by aides who basically are yes men and yes women. That's what surrounds a president, people who follow the orders of the president, so they basically agree with the president. And for Trump, he's known to have surrounded himself also with yes people. So both will be at this disadvantage because both will be unused to being challenged the way that one is challenged in a debate. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah,
two presidents, a former one, a current one, and we'll see which one comes out on top.
You know, that's another thing that makes this one rather interesting that we don't normally see in a presidential debate. Both individuals have a record that they can run on and be challenged on.
That's right. And it'll be interesting because since the views of most people are already baked in. Each one, the antis of each one will be looking for the weak spots of the candidate they despise. So, you know, the anti-Trump people will be looking to see whether Trump is as bombastic, rude, and fact-free as he tends to be in many of his speeches. And the anti-Biden people will look to see whether he looks or sounds feeble or confused.
Yeah.
So everybody will be looking for their particular point of view here.
And I thought it was interesting. Reportedly, Mr. Trump has admitted that he was overly aggressive in his first debate the last election cycle and has said that he has learned from that. So it will be interesting to see, again, especially given the circumstances with the unique rules of this debate, if that is true. As you were pointing out, those who love one candidate and or hate the other are not going to be moved by anything that's said tonight, certainly. We already know that this election, perhaps more than most, is going to come down to these voters in the margins. But the polls are saying that many voters are not just not paying that much attention yet. They're not eager to necessarily jump into this mud pit at this point. Can either Mr. Biden or Mr. Trump win over those in the middle this early and keep them come November? I guess at the end of the day, I'm wondering, who is this debate really for?
Well, that's a very good question, and it's hard to really assess that right now. But there's always people on the margins, and so it's clear that both will be trying to aim for that slice. It's a very small slice of people. But nonetheless, this election is going to be decided by the small slices in each of the states. But, you know, what's really interesting about this is that both men will be saying whatever they say, but in debates, really, the viewers in most debates, the listeners in most debates, really mostly agree with the ones they like to begin with.
Yeah.
And so debates mostly confirm the audience's preferences. Yet there's another element to this. Although debates confirm what people already think about the candidates, nonetheless, there is some polling that suggests that the commentary, the analysis that follows, wherever the media kind of settles on assessing the debate about who won or who made more errors or mm-hmm. who was more convincing, you get that analysis that follows a few days after. When that settles in, a lot of the viewers sort of tend to start to agree with the mainline assessment of how the debate went.
Hmm.
But whether they agree as to who won or who lost,
yeah.
It really doesn't matter because ultimately they'll make up their minds at the voting booth. And when they do that, the debates will be far off their minds.
Now, you were mentioning earlier some of the rules of this debate. I want to talk a little bit about that because obviously things that we have not seen in recent history with no studio audience being one of those ground rules for this debate. I understand that Mr. Trump's people are saying that that may make it easier for him to stay on message rather than being drawn into the reaction of the crowd. Is that perhaps a Trump win on that point?
Could be, but we'll have to see how he behaves. I mean, he tends to love audience reaction.
Yeah.
He thrives off of the reaction, and the absence of any reaction may throw him off, or not. It's hard to assess that. I mean, we'll have to see how he performs. And the same thing for Joe Biden. You know, politicians love to get feedback from an audience. Usually when they speak, it's a prepared speech of one kind or another, and there are sort of applause lines that are thrown into the various speeches and stump speeches. But there won't be any audience to cheer or to clap this time. So we'll have to see who benefits from that.
Yeah, and no prepared remarks. They're not going to be able to take any notes with them. They'll be able to make notes while they're standing at the podium, but not going to be able to take notes with them to the podium. So I thought that was interesting. Going to be very, I think, telling to see both of these individuals kind of think on their feet.
Yeah, and actually that's a good setup, because really when you're talking about a debate, it really shouldn't be a boxing match about who lands a punch here, who lands a punch there. It really should be lay out for the American people what are your views, what are your programs, what do you propose to do, without any punchlines, without any gotcha kind of statements. Here's what I want to do, here's what my opponent wants to do. And then it's up to the American public to sort of assess, okay, which program or sets of programs appeal to be the most about how you know, the country will fare going forward.
So how much of that comes down to not so much what they say, because I think most people know where each candidate stands on the issues that they care about at this point, not so much what they say, but the way they say it, again, given the fact they're going to have to think off the top of their head.
Right. Well, it's certainly about the policies they espouse, as I just said, but also another element is the competency factor.
Yeah.
Do the candidates, or does each one or both, look competent and fit for the job?
Mm-hmm.
Because the presidency, of course, is a very demanding job, and it's one that really requires that the person be up to speed and be able to think fast, quickly, and wisely.
Yeah.
So what you're looking at in a debate is not just what they say they will do, but their demeanor. Do they look like they are competent enough to deal with the complexities of the job?
Especially in this race, where age has been so much of an issue in the lead-up. And we mentioned the microphones being turned off when it's the other person's opportunity to speak. And I wonder if that's really going to work. I mean, the audience, the television audience, may not hear the other candidate interrupt, but they are going to be able to hear each other and probably will react when they do. And I'm thinking, hey, if I shout loud enough from my podium, the mic on the other podium will pick it up. So I'm just wondering if this is, I like the idea. I'm wondering if it's actually going to work.
Well, that's a good question, and of course we'll have to wait and see, because yes, each of the candidates will be able to hear what's being said in the room, though we won't in the audience, and we'll have to see whether each one reacts or decides to ignore. It seems to me that that's part of the debate training that the candidates should be undergoing. I suspect that Biden is undergoing that kind of training. You know, don't respond to something that's not on the mic. It's not clear to me whether Trump is being trained that way, because he tends to not like to be sort of trained. He sort of likes to be extemporaneous. But it would seem to me that if you're doing some kind of advising to the candidates, you should tell them, well, if it's not on mic, and even though you can hear it, you should just simply ignore it and go on with whatever you wanted to say.
That would be good advice. Again, former Time Magazine senior reporter, professor of political science at St. Peter's University, Alan Sanders, with us this morning, breaking down tonight's debate. Earliest ever in a presidential cycle, should be rather interesting. Professor Sanders, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Chris. Take care.
So the countdown is officially on now. Independence Day is just 1 week from today. 1 week exactly from today. And of course, the 4th of July is all about backyard cookouts and having fun with friends and family and the fireworks, no doubt. But the reason for the celebration is, of course, to mark the anniversary of the United States Declaration of Independence from Great Britain. Heck, everyone knows that, right? Well, you might actually be surprised and even a little dismayed to find out just how much some people don't know about the holiday. Back in July of 2022, we spoke with Patrick Quinn. is a parenting expert with the tutoring platform Brainly. It is today's Throwback Thursday. You recently did a survey, found out that nearly half of middle and high school students don't actually know why we celebrate.
Yeah, that's right. It was a little surprising, you know. We were expecting that there would be, you know, a percentage that didn't know, but not quite that many. So it was a little surprising to find out that so few people knew what the actual holiday was or what we were celebrating.
Yeah.
We were shooting off the fireworks and, you know, grilling and all that stuff.
A little surprising and a little shocking, and almost as many don't know that there are even 50 states or that there's one star for each state on the flag. I mean, this seems like pretty basic stuff.
You know, something like that would have surprised me, except not too long ago, I broke up an argument between two full-grown adults who were arguing over whether the flag had 51 or 52 stars on it. So I had to be the one to correct them. So, you know, I guess that's just kind of an across-the-board knowledge gap there.
How can this be? I mean, this is, when I saw some of these results from this survey, the first question that comes to my mind is, how is this even possible? I mean, the easy thing is to point the finger at the schools, but I wonder, is it that they assume that the kids must have already learned that from their parents, and are parents assuming that they're learning it from the school? Is it one of those things like everybody thinks somebody else is, you know, Phil, you're letting the kids know this?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, I'm a former educator. I used to teach 6th, 7th, and 8th grade special ed, science, and English. So there's absolutely a portion of that in almost all parts of education. The other part of it is, you know, a lot of schools aren't teaching that specifically just because you only get so much time with your kids during the day, and they prioritize things differently in different areas. So it could just be a thing that, you know, kind of gets bypassed without even realizing it. Or it could be something that's taught quickly and kids just forget, you know, kids and adults, they kind of forget what was happening or what was being said. So I think it's just a combination of things. But a lot of times these schools really, they'll just have different priorities for what they're teaching. And, you know, the teachers have to sort of abide by that, by the curriculum that the districts have kind of put out for them.
That does, I guess, make a lot of sense, that if you think, oh, my goodness, this is such basic information, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, it would be fairly easy for a student, especially anyone other than the best students, to maybe miss that in the larger scheme of things because they're being overloaded with so much stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So what can we do then to, I mean, and there are other results from this survey that show, again, a lack of what I think many people would consider some basic information about the American Revolution and, you know, how it all ties into Independence Day and July 4th. And by the way, there were a fair number of people who didn't associate Independence Day and July 4th. They realized they're the same one and the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
So how do we then kind of help our students, understand, our kids understand what it's all about?
You know what? It's pretty easy to start tying things into, any of your celebrations that you're doing with your kids. You know, my kids and I, we would make these, red, white, and blue, yogurt pops for the 4th of July. So, you know, and just simple things like, hey, what are these colors representing? What do we do? Where else do we see these colors? You see them on the flag, and then kind of talk them through, you know, on a low level, especially when they're younger, as to what the holiday is. You know, talk about the fact that we're not just out there to go see fireworks, but this is a celebration. It's a celebration of what's happening, what happened in our country. A really interesting thing to do is just to point out to the kids, like, hey, you know, do you guys know that over in England and Scotland, they don't celebrate the 4th of July. They don't have an Independence Day. And then that really kind of triggers the question, like, well, why not? And it's like, well, because this is a holiday for our country, and kind of go through that sort of stuff. So anything, any sort of celebrations that you're doing with your kids, it's really easy to tie in little lessons that they're able to then really connect with the day, connect with the celebrations that are happening. And then they realize, you know, it's a really tightly tied in lesson for themselves.
You know, I guess in the larger sense, this also speaks to the fact that sometimes, quite often, in fact, maybe the parents and the schools are not always on the same page when it comes to curriculum, what the kids are learning, what they should be learning, and where they should be at any particular point in time. This is just one example that underscores a larger issue that we know that we have within the education system.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, every kid is going to be different. They all come from different backgrounds. Their parents have different education levels. So, you know, just when you have your kids at home, you just try to find out what they don't know. And if they don't know certain things, then you could just help them out with that and give them those little boosts they need, or, you know, get them working on online to help them teach themselves, which is an even better way for them to learn. Once they get curious about something, it's great for us to, you know, promote that curiosity and get them going to help themselves to expand their own knowledge.
Yeah, you bring up such a good point because a lot of times parents don't always feel comfortable trying to help their kids learn because maybe we're not sure. How often has it been that every parent has had the instance where they've taken a look at their kids' homework and they say, I have no idea. Maybe at one point I knew how to do this, but I don't even know. So how can I help my kid? But what we really can do is help them learn, how to find the answers that they're looking for.
Exactly. And I mean, you are describing to a T my relationship with mathematics. I am just, I'm terrible at it. So when I get my daughter's, you know, freshman in high school math, I am absolutely lost. So, so it is something, you know, I don't want to try to teach the wrong way. And also the ways that we learned in, you know, the 80s and 90s, it's a different way for them to do the math nowadays. That is very, it's not really a compatible thing. We can get the same answer, but it's a different method that the kids are learning these days. So, yeah. That's why I like with Brainly, it's a great resource for parents to be able to use. So if they don't know that stuff, they can say, hey, jump on Brainly, because then it'll be answered by kids their age and help them to find the correct answer or the path to the right answer. So, especially when we don't know, because then you don't have to feel like such a dummy.
So to circle back where we started this survey on the surprising facts that we think everyone knows about Independence Day, the July 4th holiday. Sometimes maybe it's not so obvious, and maybe have that conversation with your kids, make sure that they do understand exactly what it is that we're celebrating and why. You've got more information on your resources for learning, and also more information on the survey that we referenced on your website, right?
That's right. Yeah, you can go to brainly.com and you can see like the full results of that. And then there's a whole bunch of other surveys that they've done throughout the years that kind of tie into, you know, different times of year or different educational processes. So it's great to kind of go through that and get a broader understanding of not just what maybe your kids don't know, but what most kids don't know. And that could be something that you can turn to your kids and say, hey, did you know this many people didn't know this thing? Do you know it?
Yep.
kind of prompt the questions that way.
As you were saying earlier, in some cases, maybe even some adults don't know. So good time to refresh our all of our collective memories about what the holiday is all about. Again, Patrick Quinn, parenting expert with the tutoring platform Brainly. Patrick, thanks very much for taking the time. Happy 4th.
Thank you. You as well.
From July of 2022, it is our Throwback Thursday segment this morning, and a real eye-opener indeed.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A homeowners association member in New Palestine, Indiana, fairly close to home here, New Palestine, Indiana, homeowners association member has stepped down from her position after she was caught on video defecating on the side of her neighbor's house. Those darn HOAs, man, I tell you. Apparently, she did it not once, but twice. Surveillance footage shows the brazen woman dropping her pants and taking a dump right beside the air conditioning unit in broad daylight. And it wasn't the first time, according to the homeowner speaking to local news reporters. Wow. That is a disagreement. I mean, I've heard of disputes between neighbors, but that's taking it to an extreme. According to court documents, the woman told deputies that it wasn't anything personal. She just had to go. The serial pooper has been charged with criminal trespassing, criminal mischief, and public nudity. Throwing a nudity charge in there as well. Well, I don't know what triggered this particular response, but there's got to be a story in there somewhere. Elsewhere in the broken news, the odd and unusual side of the headlines, from the international file, a woman in New Zealand has sued her boyfriend of 6 years after he changed his mind about driving her to the airport, causing her to miss her flight. Boyfriend agreed to drive her to the airport, reneged on the deal, caused her to miss the flight, so she sued him. I'm guessing the relationship is over. What is that? Report is the woman, who is headed overseas, argued that she had a verbal contract with her boyfriend that not only included driving her to the airport, but also dog sitting for her pooch while she was gone. She claims that as a result of his sudden 180, she incurred considerable costs from having to add another day to travel, organizing a shuttle to the airport, and kenneling her dogs. The judge threw out the lawsuit on the grounds that for an agreement to be enforceable, there needed to be an intention to create a legally binding relationship. So he dismissed the lawsuit. Had to be a legally binding relationship, and he did not believe that that was the case in this. I'm assuming that the relationship has been permanently grounded at this point, but tell me you want to break up without telling me you want to break up. You know what it is? I'm guessing she ended the relationship, but he's probably, based on what happened that led up to this whole mess, I'm guessing he's not losing any sleep over it. Let's see. Gotta have a story from Florida each and every day in the broken news, it seems like. And this is just a crazy story. And I'm not making this up. Initially, when I saw this story, I thought there's no way this can be real. But apparently this was actually documented in the American Journal of Medical Case Reports, that a Florida man, I don't have his name, I know he's 63 years old, a 63-year-old Florida man, had to cover more than his mouth when he sneezed while out to breakfast with his wife. The report says that the man had a healing surgical wound on his abdomen from a cystectomy, which is a procedure to remove his urinary bladder, that he underwent 15 days earlier. Okay, so he's healing his wound from his surgery. During breakfast, the man sneezed forcibly, followed by a coughing fit, and he immediately noticed a wet sensation and pain in his lower abdomen. Looking down, he observed several loops of pink bowel protruding from his recent surgical site. My apologies if you're having breakfast at this moment. The report says paramedics arrived, covered the wound, and rushed him to a nearby hospital where he underwent emergency surgery. The man was discharged a week later and is now doing okay after literally sneezing and coughing his guts out. Literally sneezing and coughing his guts out. Wow. Again, he's going to be okay. And man, does he have a story to tell. Wow, that is crazy. And in public, no less. I hope he tipped his waitress really well, you know? Let's see here. Now, here's another report, and this was in the news some weeks ago. You remember North Korea was launching balloons into South Korea, balloons with packages that were filled with garbage that North Korea was launching into South Korea. Well, here's another story. They're still doing this. In fact, flights out of Incheon, South Korea, had to be delayed. Flights had to be delayed after balloons sent from North Korea over the border drifted into the area of the airport. Three runways had to be temporarily shut down after a balloon landed near Terminal 2 at the Incheon airport. About 1,500 such balloons have landed in South Korea since May, containing garbage, dirt, worms, even human waste in some cases. The balloons, it is believed to be, are in response to anti-North Korea propaganda broadcasts that have been launched by South Korea into the North. Activists also have sent to the North, from the South, have sent to the North leaflets, messages, and K-pop music. K-pop music. You know, I was on South Korea's side of this whole story until the K-pop music. When I learned that they're launching K-pop music into North Korea, I thought, now I can understand why North Korea is retaliating. You know, I mean, I think they're justified. Now that I get the full story, I think they are completely justified in their response, sending K-pop music into North Korea. Wow, that's low. That's all the underhanded. And finally, in the broken news this morning, and this sounds like something out of a science fiction film, scientists have created a technology called Cognify. Cognify, they call it. It is an implant that could allow prisoners to serve years of their sentence in mere minutes. It is a device they would implant, I guess, in the brain of convicted criminals, where memories could be implanted in their mind to aid with rehabilitating them faster, is the idea. You know, plant memories in their minds of spending years in the slammer when, in fact, it's only been days or even minutes. How crazy is that? Synthetic memories are customized depending on the crime committed and the unique brain structure and Synthetic memories are customized depending on the crime committed and the unique brain structure and psychological profile of the individual. This is according to the biotechnologist who created this monstrosity here. Hashim Al-Ghali is his name. Memories could cover crimes like domestic violence, hate crime, insider trading, so white-collar crimes, theft. The list goes on and on and on. They can implant memories of serving years in the slammer when in reality they have only been behind bars for a short time. By rehabilitating offenders more quickly, Cognify could enable them to reintegrate into society sooner and contribute to the workforce, become productive members of society. At the very minimum, it could relieve overcrowding in prisons. I don't know. It just sounds like something out of a science fiction film, and not in a good way. You know what I mean? Man, that's just crazy what we can do with technology today. Again, it raises all those questions. Just because we can, does that mean we should? Is that a good idea? You decide. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This message provided by WFIN.
Time now for your daily download. The numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. How many times have you moved in your lifetime? Do you ever really look forward to it? I mean, I guess on one level, it's always exciting to find a new place to live, you know, new neighborhood or even a new city or state. There's that excitement generated by the unknown. But when it comes to the process of moving, I think a lot of us don't necessarily look forward to that. However, a new survey of 2,000 Americans who have moved in the past 5 years finds that 57% of Gen Z adults, so young adults, actually enjoy the process of moving. Really, the process of moving? They actually enjoy moving. For baby boomers, only 22% share that enthusiasm. And I think it has more to do with the amount of stuff that you have. When you get into the, you know, older ages, like the baby boomers, you got a lot more stuff you got to figure out what to do with than you do for, you know, at your younger ages where the Gen Zers are. So it's easier to be enthusiastic when you don't really have a whole lot of stuff to move. That being said, of the individuals in the survey, about 60% say they attempted to create a moving budget when they change residences. But 80% actually exceed that budget, and it took respondents an average of 5 months to recover financially. And that's really the bottom line of this survey, the important point in the survey. Most people find that it costs more to move than what they expect, and it can take a long time to get back financially to cover those costs. Some of the most unexpected expenses include renting a moving truck. They didn't expect it to cost as much as it actually did. Other top unexpected expenses of moving included purchasing packing materials for all of that stuff, and the cost of having to put at least some of your belongings into temporary storage. So, bottom line, don't let these things sneak up on you. It can be more expensive than you expect in order to move. You don't want to end up being in a financial bind as a result. Well, now that summer is officially finally here, that means it is time to gear up with the latest tech to make the most of the season. And tech and lifestyle expert Stephanie Humphrey with us this morning. Stephanie, what are some of your top tips for using technology to enhance our summer fun?
Well, thanks for having me, Chris. And whether we're talking about smart financial tools to manage summer spending or advanced grilling gadgets for those perfect barbecues or some smart home tech to keep your house more efficient, there is something out there for everybody. And today we're going to look at some of the best tech innovations that will hopefully make your summer unforgettable.
All right. So let's see here. We'll go down the list. It says here, and this is perfect timing because a lot of kids may be getting their first summer jobs, things like that. Mm-hmm. So you have something for parents to help them manage their finances responsibly.
Absolutely. A lot of kids are starting summer jobs, and it's important to provide them with age-appropriate financial tools to help them learn how to responsibly manage their money. Chase's high school and college checking accounts are great for this. The accounts are going to help provide tools to manage finances more independently, but they're going to be able to do it all through the Chase mobile app. You'll get features like Zelle for sending money. You can track what they've spent and help with some budgeting, and then the kid won't need to download multiple apps, so that makes it easier for both them and their parents. And it's really all about empowering them to gain some financial independence in a digital-first world.
And also imparting some very important lessons that will serve them well as they get older. You were talking about leveraging technology in your home this summer. So what have you got here?
Well, one of the must-have gadgets for your smart home this summer is the Roborock Robot Cleaning Vacuum Q-Revo Pro. Now, this has a FlexiArm Design Edge mopping system that is going to ensure thorough cleaning, even in some hard-to-reach areas and along the edges against the wall there. And the Q-Revo Pro offers an effective full-suite self-maintenance with hot water mop washing and intelligent dirt detection for automatic rewash and remop. And the Q-Revo Pro carries advanced robotic cleaning technology, making it more accessible to customers. And we know Prime Day is just around the corner, so this is going to be a great value for entry-level users. And it's available at Target, Amazon, and Roborock's official website. So if you can pick it up on Prime Day, that might save you a couple bucks.
Yeah, because nobody wants to be messing with that stuff during the summertime. There are too many other fun things to do to be stuck at home doing all those chores.
That's right.
Grilling, obviously grilling out, very big this time of year. You've got the latest in grilling technology. This is pretty cool.
It is. It's super cool because summer and grilling go hand in hand, right? And the latest from Weber is truly exciting. The Searwood is Weber's next generation pellet grill. And this was designed to give people a lot more confidence and control when they grill. So you can make delicious meals any time of day, whether you're talking about that authentic smoky flavor of the low and slow barbecue, or maybe you need that really high searing heat for the perfect steak. This grill can do all of that and be ready to cook in less than 15 minutes. Now, the brain of the grill is called the Rapid React PID, and this works so that the grill actually will self-adjust as you cook. Then you add in the Weber Connect app, so now you can monitor and control the grill remotely, and that makes it perfect for all those gatherings where you actually want to be over there with your guests and not be, you know, chained to the grill all day long. So it's a really, really cool piece of equipment for your outdoor kitchen.
Absolutely. Cool is the word. And you also have here, and I think this is something really cool, what we can do with the old devices that we have sitting around in our drawers, because everybody's got an old device that they just don't use anymore, become outdated, obsolete, whatever it might happen to be. So what do we do with these?
We all do. We all have the junk drawers. We got the nightstands and everything else. And it might surprise you to know that there is $43 billion worth of that unused tech sitting in our houses across the United States. I know, it's crazy. And, you know, a lot of people don't know what to do with those old iPhones when you upgrade because you can't throw them in the trash. So that's where EcoATM comes in. EcoATM is going to help people properly recycle their unused smartphones, but then you'll get cash on the spot as well. You can get up to $270 for an iPhone 13 Pro, but you'll also get some great trade-in deals for other devices from Samsung, Google, and a lot more. And since 2009, EcoATM has collected over 45 million devices. So this really gives a second life to more than 20 million pounds of e-waste, and that keeps it from ending up in those landfills. And they have over 6,000 kiosks in national retailers like Walmart and Kroger, but in less than 10 minutes, you can recycle and then earn some cash on the used device. And if the phone happens to be a little bit older and turns out it's not eligible for cash, EcoATM will still take it anyway, and they'll get it off your hands and they'll recycle it responsibly. So it's a win-win either way.
Yeah, I was going to say sometimes that's enough right there just to get it out of the way so that it's not cluttering up your space. Again, technology and lifestyle expert Stephanie Humphrey with us this morning with some tech for your summer. Where do we get more information?
Well, for more info, you can just follow me on social media at TechLifeSteph.
Stephanie, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care and have a great summer.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, with school out for the summer and just in time for one of the busiest driving weeks of the year, Project Yellow Light is spreading the word about the deadly consequences of distracted driving. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.